Welcome everyone to the Boca in English podcast. This is your host, Gabriel Aguero. I'm recording by myself today, so today's episode will be on the shorter end. Today I'll be recapping Boca's loss to Talleres, 1-0 at La Bombonera. This is the club's first loss since December of 2019, 11 months without a loss. We're going to keep in mind that there was a break in the middle because of the pandemic, obviously, I believe 4 or 5 months, but it's still a really long time without a loss. This is Miguel Angel Russo's first loss, but we are going to go ahead and recap it. First, I'll start off with the starting lineup. So we had Agustin Rossi in goal. Bear with me, guys. I have a little bit of allergies today, but we had Agustin Rossi in goal. Julio Bufarini at right back. The center backs were Lisandro Lopez and Carlos Izquierdos, and Manuel Mas was on the left side. In midfield, we had Nicolas Capaldo and Leo Jara playing that double pivot role. On the right, we had Maroni. On the left, we had Sebastian Villa, and our two forwards were Carlos Tevez and Franco Soldano. So a couple of changes with respects to the team that defeated Newell's. These changes have to do with one, an injury or two. Off the top of my head, it's just Eduardo Salio, who's injured, picked up a strain on his hamstring, so he will be out for a couple of weeks. And national team duty. A couple of players went off to Colombia. Campuzano, Cardona, Fabra, and Andrada off with Argentina. So without further ado, we are going to go ahead and get into the match. As I'm looking at the highlights, it was an overwhelmingly, I would say, boring first half for the most part. The game started off with intensity 8 seconds in. Carlos Tevez with a very, very harsh plancha, as they would say in Argentina, a very harsh tackle on ex-Boca Pochettino, who was arguably one of the best players on the pitch that night. A lot of fans think Carlos Tevez should have been red carded, and if VAR was there, I think he would have been red carded. I think it would have been justified. I mean, it was a very, very rough tackle. But as we proceed with the game, Boca really were really flat in the first half. Couldn't really create any opportunities. I remember tweeting that we don't have anybody in midfield who's creating any chances. I mean, Tevez was having a hard time. Maroni was having a hard time as well. Villa. The overwhelmingly better side in the first half was Talleres for the most part, even though they didn't create too many chances either. But they were the better half. They did look like they were going to open up the scoreline before us. There was an opportunity in the first half. It was a cross from the left side from Emmanuel Mas, and Soldano did get was able to header the ball, and Caranta, the Talleres goalkeeper, makes a great save. Caranta, ex-Boca, who played in 2007 for the club, Copa Libertadores winner, of course, as we remember him. But this is one of the things that I've talked about on the podcast quite a few times, is Soldano, his ability to really win aerial duels and win headers. And he hasn't had much service in terms of headers, but he had two or three pretty good chances against Talleres. So as we continue, Talleres had a really good free kick in the first half. Tomas Pochettino almost scored from pretty far out, if I must say. I mean, it was a pretty overall, in terms of possession, Talleres had most of the possession. I have to take a quick look at the numbers just to make sure of that. But Talleres had a majority of possession, but really no team threatened each other too much. And as we get into the second half, is where things really started clicking for Boca. There was a lot of free-flowing football. Maroni started to combine with Carlos Tevez. Villa was starting to get involved a lot more. Villa had a really good opportunity in the opening 10-15 minutes of the second half to open up the scoreline, and he wasn't able to. Soldano, actually, was a couple minutes after that. Pretty good service. I believe this was Sebastian Villa again. He found Soldano near the penalty box. Soldano tries to get a foot on the ball, and he doesn't. He is tackled by the Talleres defender, and he is brought down. The Boca bench shouted for a penalty. In my opinion, looking at the replay, and again, I have the replay, the referee doesn't. The referee is going to be, unfortunately, he had a lot to do with this match. He was terrible, and I think he is even suspended for the following match day. He won't be refereeing any matches But he was really, really bad for both sides, I would have to say. So Soldano was brought down. In my opinion, it was a clear penalty, clear penalty. Unfortunately, that call did not go our way. But the entire bench, in an empty stadium, you could hear the entire bench shout for a penalty. As I'm looking at the replay once again, yeah, Soldano was brought down. But number 15 on Tajeres, he was brought down pretty tough. He stuck a foot in front of him and brought down Soldano. So as the second half continued, there was a lot more spaces for both teams. I think there was a good 15 minutes in the second half where Boca had Tajeres pinned in their own net, and it really looked like the opener was just was bound to come towards the last half hour of the match, I would say, or last 20 minutes. Juan Chope ended up coming in, replacing Soldano. And he created a couple of opportunities for himself. Juan Chope created more opportunities than Soldano created in the entire game for himself. The only thing with Juan Chope is that when he had a clear shot on goal, he didn't take a shot, which is very weird. He looked pretty slow in that sense, but he was creating opportunities for himself. Carlos Tevez found him on a couple of times. And then towards the end of the second half, they should just find the goal, a quick 1-2 between Soñora and I don't remember who gave the assist, but Buffarini was late to react and to sort of anticipate that play. He was in good position to go ahead and beat his man, in this case it being Soñora, but he didn't. And the most surprising thing about Tajeres' goal is Agustin Rossi, who had a pretty solid match overall. Being a goalkeeper and being allowed to use your hands, he comes out and tries to block the shot with his feet for whatever reason. Nobody knows why. Nobody knows why he went ahead and did that. He had, like I said, he can use his hands. He's a goalkeeper. And he didn't. So that's pretty unfortunate. A couple minutes after that, Tajeres on a break. I'm pretty sure it was 2v1, 3v1. And Agustino Obando just brings down the Tajeres forward carelessly. It's a tackle that anybody would have done, including myself. He sent off right away. And then seconds after that, Tajeres is on the attacking end once again, and Carlos Izquierdos goes in for a reckless tackle and is automatically sent off again with his studs up. Pretty unfortunate. You could tell our players were pretty upset about the score. Maybe they didn't agree with some calls that the referee made. Whatever it may be, that tackle from Carlos Izquierdos is just unacceptable. He will miss the next match along with Obando. Obando, you can sort of justify. I mean, they're on a breakaway, and you have to do whatever you can to stop the man, so he went in for the tackle. Unfortunately, mistimed it, so he received the red. So yeah, that's that. Boca were, again, 11 months without losing a game. That streak inevitably had to end. And if you ask most fans, we agree that it should have ended in the domestic tournament rather than the Copa Libertadores before, you know, the important games get underway. As we recall, this Copa de la Liga Profesional gives you a ticket into the Copa Libertadores of 2021. Boca already have their tickets booked for that competition. This is sort of a last-minute invented tournament. I don't want to say that it's not important. Every tournament is important. Every game is. But certainly the Copa Libertadores is Boca's priority. So if this streak, if this non-losing streak continued, the pressure would have continued to build over the course of the couple weeks and forthcoming months. And who knows how the players would have dealt with that, because the media definitely has already been talking about Boca not losing a game under Miguel Ángel Russo. Again, we have to keep in mind that there was no football for a couple of months. But just a couple of players that I want to point out that played against Tajeres. We have Emmanuel Mas. He lost possession on 26 occasions. Buffarini lost possession on 23 occasions. Sebastián Villa lost possession 30 times. And Gonzalo Maroni lost possession 28 times. If I'm not mistaken, that sums up to about 97 times those four players lost possession. In my opinion, if you're going to take a look at why Boca lost this game and why in the second half, apart from the solid 15-20 minutes from Boca Juniors, why Tajeres had so many counterattacks and so many attacks on the break, it's because of that. I mean, our players lost possession on so many occasions. I mean, just taking a look at these numbers, 26, 23, 30, 28 times is just unexcusable. They have to do a better job of controlling the ball and keeping the ball. So that's that. I don't have much else to say about the match against Talleres. Boca will face Lanús this Friday, November 20th. It's a fairly early game, 5:20 p.m. here Eastern Time, 7:20 p.m. local time in Argentina. And it's expected that Boca will field an overwhelmingly second-string lineup against Lanús ahead of the midweek match against Inter in Brazil, which is obviously, like I said a couple minutes ago, the priority for the club, the Copa Libertadores. So the Miguel Russo is going to rest a bunch of key players who are coming back from international duty. Carlos Tevez, who has pretty much played every single minute of every game so far in 2020, and he's been in tremendous form. Reports surfacing this morning said that the probable 11 against Lanús is Andrada, Jara, Zambrano, Ávila, Mas, Maroni, Medina, Pulpo, González, Ceballos, Zárate, and Ávila. So these are a bunch of players who haven't received a lot of playing time, one of them being Mauro Zárate. If we remember the saga between him and whether he was going to depart the club or whether he was going to re-sign, and Miguel Ángel Russo expressed that he wanted Zárate to stay, and a lot of fans were asking themselves, well, why isn't Zárate playing? For Miguel Ángel Russo, I was listening to a really good show on Cadena Cenesa yesterday midday, and the reporters on that show basically said it's pretty simple. For Miguel Ángel Russo, Zárate is not a left wing, is not a right wing. He is a center forward. He plays Carlos Tevez's position, and since Tevez has been in tremendous form, there's simply no spot for Mauro Zárate. There's no playing time for Mauro Zárate because Tevez has been in such good form. So now that Tevez is taking, he's most likely going to be arrested this Friday against Lanús, Zárate finally finds himself in the starting lineup. So I'm excited to see him. But above all else, there's two names who you probably didn't recognize that I just named off of the starting 11. Medina, 18-year-old Medina, who is labeled as a classic number 5, classic center defensive mid. And Ezequiel Ceballos, he is a left winger, also 18 years of age, both from the 2002 category. These two players I have seen play in the youth divisions when the club would broadcast them live on YouTube, and for the reserve, I've seen them play for the reserve when the reserve games would be also live on the club's official YouTube page. They are two of the most anticipated players to break through to the starting 11. Both 18 years of age, they're really young, but they're promising talents. I would say two of the most promising players in the past 10 years. I would put them in the top 10 easily. I don't want to overhype them. They haven't played a single minute in first division yet. Ceballos, I've shared a couple of videos of him on the Twitter page. He is just a fantastic, but I'm telling you, fantastic talent. Really, really good on the one-on-ones. He can beat his man with ease, beat two, three men easily in order to get into the box. So he's an exciting, exciting player. And Medina, like I said before, he's labeled as a classic number five, a classic center defensive mid. Those center defensive mids that you don't really tend to see anymore, who are really good at retaining the ball, recovering the ball, and just playing the ball out wide or forward whenever it's needed. So those are two of the most important players, important players coming out of our youth academy. One other player that I want to mention is Ávila. He's expected to start against Lanús. Like I said, Boca is fielding a second-string lineup against Lanús. So this lineup, the lineup against Lanús, could give us a good indication as to who is going to play on Wednesday night in Brazil against Inter for the first leg of the Copa Libertadores round of 16. If Ávila does start against Lanús, there's two options to play on Wednesday. And that's either Soldano, he's going to continue playing that position, or Carlos Tevez is going to move up front, and we're going to see a similar lineup like the one we saw against Newell's. If you guys remember, and you saw me tweeting a couple days before the match against Newell's, I did say that lineup would be a very similar lineup to the lineup we see in Brazil against Inter. It was the last real test that Miguel Ángel Russo had with all of his players available to use. So we might see line up with Carlos Tevez as the lone striker, behind him Cardona on the right. We don't know yet. It doesn't look like Salvio is going to be fit in time, and from what I'm hearing, Miguel Caruso does not want to risk him. He basically doesn't want to aggravate his injury, because if you know that happens, then Salvio's out for the second half. So the second leg. And obviously, you don't want him to be out for the second leg. People are saying that he will be available on the bench, so he might get some playing time towards the end, but he definitely won't start in Brazil, is what I'm hearing. And on the left, we're probably going to have Villa. On the right, like I said, it's still unknown. It could be Maroni. I don't think it'll be Sarate, but it could very well be Maroni. So that's the probable lineup against Lanús, as I take a look over here at the upcoming matches. So like I said, this Friday, November 20th, we host Lanús a La Bombonera. An hour or two before the game, Boca will finally be awarded the Copa, the Superliga title that was clinched back in March, in that crazy ending against River. Boca will finally be awarded that title months later, the now defunct Superliga, because the Superliga, as we all know, does not exist anymore. So the Liga Profesional will be awarding us a title that doesn't even belong to them. That's how bizarre Argentine football is. If we just rewind a couple of months, the whole situation as to why Boca were not awarded that title is because on the last match day of the season, Boca were hosting Gimnasia and River were away to Atlético Tucumán in another province. River had 1 point advantage going into the last match day of the season, and the Superliga decided to keep the title at La Bombonera just in case, you know, Boca clinched the title, and just in case Boca would win and River lost, you know, the Superliga title would go to Boca right away. And River Plate really were not having it. They didn't accept that. They really didn't like it, because they thought, well, what if we win the title in Tucumán? And the Superliga said, well, you know what, that's fine, we'll go ahead and keep it in our offices. And in that case, we all know what ended up happening. Boca clinched the title. River ended up losing, I think it was 2-1 in Tucumán. Boca won 1-0, therefore winning the Superliga by 2 point advantage in front of our home crowd, before the pandemic, before, you know, lockdown and all that. It was a perfect opportunity to just award us the title, at least drive it over to the stadium. I think it was about 25 to 30 minutes away. The Superliga could have easily done that. I don't know why they didn't. The following match day was played behind closed doors, and we didn't see Boca. I think we saw Boca play one more match. I think it was in Colombia, if I'm not mistaken. But that was it, you know, so that's why we haven't been awarded our title. And unfortunately, you know, it's going to be in a situation without fans in an empty stadium. But this is just, you know, the icing on the cake as to the horrible and the mismanagement across Argentine football, no matter what the league is called, whether it's Liga Profesional, Superliga, whatever it may be. So that's the case. Again, Boca host Lanús this Friday for match day 4 of the Liga Profesional. On Wednesday, November 25th, we're away to Internacional in Brazil in a huge, huge match. After that, the following weekend, Boca hosts Lanús in the second-to-last match day of the group of the Liga Profesional. Let me go ahead and read off the standings for the group after our loss to Talleres. So looking at Zone 4, as they call it, Group 4, we have Talleres in first place with 7 points, Boca in second with 6 points, Newell's in third with 3 points, and Lanús in last place with 1 point. Lanús is also expected to field an alternative or mixed 11 perhaps this Friday, because they have a midweek match in the Copa Sudamericana, and that's obviously the club's priority. So they're expected to field a mixed 11, a second string 11. So it's imperative. I mean, I'm not going to say the top two spots are really close. So we have Talleres in first with 7 points and Boca in second with 6 points. I'm not going to say that Boca has to win against Lanús, but if we want to clinch the top two positions in order to progress to the knockout round where we fight for the title, Boca has to gain some points against Lanús. Hopefully, you know, we do win. A draw wouldn't be too bad either. But we also have to hope that Talleres and Newell's, you know, end up drawing, or maybe with a Newell's win in order to benefit us. So there's tons of scenarios that could play out. This is probably one of the most exciting groups. I remember when the draw took place, this was labeled as a group of death, and I don't think it's a group of death, but it's certainly one of the most exciting groups. It's definitely with three games left. The top three positions are only separated by 4 points, if I'm not mistaken. Yes, 4 points. So still a while to go, a couple weeks before we close out the group stage of the Copa Liga Profesional. But yeah, that's all I have for you guys today. So thank you for tuning in, everybody, and until next time.